Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
The college football season is right around the corner. And of course, you're going to be able to follow the Utah Utes all season long right here on 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. If you listen to the show enough, you know that I'm somewhat of a Notre Dame homer. Do love the Fighting Irish, and so I'm thrilled for this next segment. We can kind of tie this into the season opener for Notre Dame on August 31st when they take on Texas A&M. I'm being joined right now by the author of a new book. It's called Era, The Life and Legacy of Notre Dame Legend Era Parseghian. This right here to me is a fascinating story all the way around, and the author of this book is Mark Hubbard, and Mark is joining us right now over the phone. Mark, a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely a pleasure, Mark. I know that as far as Notre Dame football is concerned, you're hard-pressed to find more of a legend than Era Parseghian. He falls in line with the likes of Newt Rockne and Frank Leahy. He came around Notre Dame at a very crucial time in the football program's era. And so, all in all, I think this is a fascinating story.
Well, I'm delighted to be able to tell it, and he became a personal friend and a wonderful human being. And when the family approached me to write this book, I was honored, and I want all of your listeners to know that I'm not making a penny in author's royalties here. All of the author's royalties are going to go to the Era Parseghian Medical Research Foundation. So that's just another reason to be interested and buy the book.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's start with, you mentioned, right, the idea of the family coming and approaching you about this. I mean, this is the authorized biography, and that was one of the very first things that stood out to me about this book. I mean, this is the authorized biography of Coach Era.
That's correct. About 10 years ago, I was asked by Joe Doyle, who was the sports editor of the South Bend Tribune, to consider writing a book about the 1966 national championship season, which he believed needed to have a comprehensive book written. And so he drove me out to meet Era, who was his friend, and I'd never spent any time with Era. And so that was the beginning of it. Very cute story when I got there. I think Era was slightly annoyed that he was going to have to answer questions about the 66 season. So he sat down in his office, and he looked up from his desk, and he said, "So I suppose you want to hear about the 1966 10-10 tie at Michigan State." And my answer really set up what became a friendship for the rest of his life and probably led to this book. I said, "No, Coach, I want you to look at this picture." And the picture was of him in 1941 as a senior in high school and in his high school team at Akron South. And there were 11 players, and Era was in the backfield. And standing right next to him was an African-American player, which had to be very unusual for Akron in those days. And he looked at the picture, and he paused, and he thought it over, and he looked up. He said, "That's Conwell Finley, our tailback." And I'll tell you what, at that moment, I knew that he believed that I would write a different kind of a book about the 66 national championship year. And, of course, that friendship that I developed led to Katie Parseghian and his wife calling me 2 years after his passing and said, "Mark, I want you to write Era's biography." And that was just an honor and a pleasure. So that's how it all began.
I will ask you some questions about the 66 season in just a moment, but I do want to continue to dive down this kind of rabbit hole of putting this book together. So how do you research a book like this with it being an authorized biography, yet the person that you're writing about is no longer with us?
Well, I had two really good advantages. The first is that I knew him pretty well, and I had a lot of visits with him, and he and I talked about a lot of subjects. From football, obviously, to politics and life, and he was a very smart guy and very insightful. But the other thing is, and I didn't realize this when I signed on to this, is he had an enormous set of files with regard to correspondence that he sent or received and things that he saved over the years that he thought were important. So I got 100% access to all of his personal files, which I was able to integrate into the book at appropriate times. And of course, there's nothing better than authenticity when you use somebody's very own words or thoughts when you're writing one of these books. And so that's how I was able to do that. And then I have over 30 hours of interviews with Katie Parsegian, who's very alert and with it, and she was able to fill in a lot of the background information about their personal life and what it was like to be a coach's wife and so on and so forth, especially the years at Miami of Ohio and Northwestern. So I had all these things going for me, and it was like having a picture puzzle turned upside down on the table. I just had to find the right pieces and put it all together. And so some of the words are mine, but a lot of it came from primary sources, which made it kind of an interesting thing to do.
Again, our guest right now is Mark Hubbard as we talk about his new book, Era. And this is just, again, a story that I highly recommend, especially if you're a college football fan, the life and legacy of a Notre Dame legend. Mark, I know we've got to skip ahead due to some time constraints. I want to start by talking about when Era became the head coach at Notre Dame, because I think that it is maybe not as well publicized by people my age, right? Maybe they're unaware of the state that the Notre Dame football program was in when Era decided to take over. And this was a guy that had previous success. It wasn't as if Notre Dame just hired him out of the blue. He had success at previous stops. What was it about Era that led Notre Dame to believe that he could be the guy that could turn this program around and back to where it once was?
Well, so the years between the Frank Leahy legendary years and Era coming and coaching in 1964 are deemed on campus as the period of penance. So it became obvious that after the Joe Kuharik departure, there was an interim coach, and then the administration at Notre Dame said, well, who could be a good coach and who was interested? Era actually made the inquiry to Father Joyce at Notre Dame and said he would be interested, and of course he became a key candidate because in three of the 4 years previous, Northwestern had played Notre Dame and beat them all 3 years. So Notre Dame had a taste of how good Era was as a coach, and that led to him being, the primary candidate and being hired because he had done such a good job coaching against us. And I call that the three luckiest losses in the history of Notre Dame football.
That's a great way to look at it, for sure. So he comes to Notre Dame in 1964. He wins two national championships. But there is something about that 1966 team. It's just special.
It is special for lots of reasons. And I was able to recount that in a separate book that I wrote called Undisputed, which is a very comprehensive book about that year and about the 66-10-10 tie at Michigan State. But it was the first year of NCAA football on ABC, when college football was on every Saturday afternoon. And so it became the first real season in what I call the television era of college football. And of course, we've seen how it's developed now over the years, so that there's college football on Saturdays and sometimes on Thursdays and sometimes other times during the week. But that was kind of the transition into college football on television. And for that reason, it was a significant year. And, of course, Notre Dame had a wonderful team. The part of the team that is hardly ever mentioned, because you can't look back and see all of the statistics, is how good the defense was that year. They had 6 shutouts in 10 games, and the defensive unit only allowed 24 points, or 2.4 points per game. No other team in the history of college football has had that kind of defensive record. And, of course, the team was, was really, really good. We came off a very good year in 64 with John Hewitt. 65 was a little bit of a disappointment because we didn't have an offense around a quarterback. We had a good running offense, and then 66 along comes Terry Hanratty and Coley O'Brien, and it all came together with Jim Seymour at receiver, and it was just a magical year for Notre Dame.
I've always felt that Coley O'Brien is probably one of the most underrated football players in Notre Dame history. They don't win the 66 title without Coley O'Brien. There's no question.
There is no question, because Terry Hanratty was hurt in the second-to-last game, which was Michigan State, and Coley O'Brien was the quarterback that led us to 10 points. And then the next weekend, he was the quarterback against USC, where, of course, we had a 51-0 score. And oddly enough, and I know Coley well, that was the first game he ever started at quarterback at Notre Dame and the last game he ever started at quarterback at Notre Dame.
Isn't that something? What a way to go, right?
Yeah, no. Well, a wonderful guy, and he played later as a tailback, and he was obviously a very strong backup to Terry, but a wonderful guy and a big component part of that success in 66.
When you look at the success that Era had in 66, I mean, it does take a few years for him to get that second national championship, and it comes around in 1973. And Mark, I'm sure this is discussed in the book, but Era wins a national title in his third year at Notre Dame. It does take, you know, 6-7 seasons before he gets a second. What was the growth like for Era as a head coach during that kind of transition period of getting to that second national championship?
Well, I think we had good teams all along. You know, we came in second in 71, and if Nebraska had lost in their bowl game, we would have probably been voted national championship that year when Joe Theismann was quarterback. But 73 was very magical in the sense that in 72, we really didn't have a very good season, and we lost we played in a final game against Nebraska in the Orange Bowl and lost by a very lopsided score. So we didn't have, you know, good expectations for 73. And then along comes 73, and again, things come together, and we, lo and behold, we're playing for the national championship against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl and win by a single point. And, you know, that was really kind of another special year in Notre Dame history.
Not long after that, Era Parseghian announces his retirement, steps away in 1974. What was it that made Era say, okay, enough is enough, this is my time to move on?
Well, I talked to him about this, and then I found a lot of evidence in the files. He was just dealing with what I'd call self-induced personal stress. The requirements of the job, not only to win, but to recruit, and then all the things he was doing on the side relative to charitable work for multiple sclerosis. And it just became a really hard job. And, of course, he didn't have all the assistance that people get today in terms of office help, and he didn't have a manager managing his events and his other things that he was doing for his career. And it just all kind of boiled up, and he decided that he wasn't going to put his health and his relationships with his family at risk, and he needed to take time off. And it was a hard decision, but it was a courageous decision. And looking back on it, he said many, many times that looking back on it, he thought it was the right decision. But of course, that wasn't the end of his career in football, because he became very well known as an analyst for both ABC with Keith Jackson and CBS with Brent Musburger. So he had a career in college football after his coaching career.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about moving on and becoming a broadcaster. You know, you hear so many stories about players or coaches that go into that profession after their times on the sideline or on the field come to an end. Did that fulfill the itch that probably was forever lasting within, you know, Era's heart, within his brain, of obviously loving the game of football, but now you take this new role as a broadcaster. Was that fulfilling for him?
I think it was really fulfilling, because he was a natural communicator, and he had really good chemistry both with Keith Jackson, who was a good friend of mine, and Brent Musburger. And of course, in those days, as we talked about, college football was one game on Saturday afternoon, a national game, and maybe one regional game. And so the fact that he was doing color with the voice that really became the voice of college football in that generation with Keith. They became a great combo, and he would tell me that he loved the preparation for going to the stadiums and learning the players and watching the film. But when the game was over, he could jump in a cab, go to the airport, fly home, and not have to worry about the press or worry about preparing for the next game, having to win. And the other part is he really liked going to the various college campuses and meeting with friends and getting to know a new generation of college football coaches. So he really liked that time in his life.
Again, right now, Mark Hubbard joining us as we talk about his new book, Era. Mark, with all that being said, you mentioned this. Era had success before he goes to Notre Dame, but it seemed, at least from my perspective, he was always attached to Notre Dame, right? When he was done with football in general, when, you know, we would see me growing up, I would see Era from time to time on TV. We're always talking about Notre Dame. It's Notre Dame, Notre Dame. What was his involvement like with the University of Notre Dame after he decided to hang it up?
Well, he stayed living in South Bend by choice. His son was still in school at Notre Dame, a rising junior, so that made sense. He and Katie became integrated into the local community. And, of course, he was, you know, he was so well thought of and beloved at Notre Dame that he was, you know, a very, very prominent person in town. But he never left South Bend. He had a place in Marco Island for the winter, but he just liked the college atmosphere, and that was one of the reasons why he really never went to the pros. He just liked the feeling of college towns, and of course, Miami of Ohio and Northwestern were part of his background, and he just thought the college game was where he wanted to be and wanted to stay. And of course, he's somebody that everybody at Notre Dame just loved and respected. So it was a great move for him.
I know, Mark, we've sat here and talked about his career for the last 10, 15 minutes, but that's just a small fraction of what made Era Parseghian Era Parseghian. I mean, he was such a dedicated human being, just a class act all the way around. And aside from his contributions on the football field, he made... I mean, he was an advocate, as you mentioned, multiple sclerosis. I mean, that hit very closely to his family.
Yes, and of course, late in his life, I mean, Era stopped coaching at 52, and he lived until 94, so there was a lot of things that he did in his life, and broadcasting was one thing, and he was involved with the insurance business in South Bend for many of those years. But toward the end of his life, a very tragic thing happened. Not only did his daughter die of complications from multiple sclerosis after many years, but his three of his four grandchildren were stricken with Niemann-Pick type C, which is an autoimmune disease. And all three of those children succumbed at a very early age. And when they knew that that was happening, it was heartbreaking. But Era dedicated himself to raising money for research against that disease. And I believe the research foundation has surpassed $40 million and keeps adding to it as a tribute to him. But the last 20 years of his life were really dedicated to raising money for medical research, which was very personal for him, but you think about it, it was a great contribution to society as well.
Again, the book is called Era, The Life and Legacy of a Notre Dame Legend. Mark, before I let you go, what is the one thing that you would like someone to know about Era Parseghian that maybe they don't know, maybe they're not too familiar with them, before they pick up your book? What's the one thing that you would say, okay, this is a characteristic of this great human being?
Well, it's a very good question, and I had to ask that question before I actually started the book. And I, after having known him and then read some of the background papers and talking to Katie, it occurred to me that this is a book about personality and character. Football is part of the story. It's a big part of the story. But this is a very fine individual. If you could have a person like this in your life influence your life like the people on the Notre Dame teams did, or have a next-door neighbor with this kind of personality and really sterling character, you would be lucky. And that's the way I wrote the book. I felt very, very lucky to know this man, and I thought it was my job to do a good job and expose his personality and character in the context of his life, something that a lot of football fans probably had no idea about.
Mark Hubbard again joining us right now to talk about the book. Mark, I know you have other writings as well. We got to briefly mention those. Before I let you go, I'd love for you to give us some more information on your other works, where we can find more about you, and of course, pick up the book, Era, The Life and Legacy of a Notre Dame Legend.
Well, I've been involved with two other football books. One was with my brother called Forgotten Four. It's about the 1953 season where there were four, the backfield, the four people were all top 10 draft picks, Neil Warden, Joe Heap, Ralph Guglielmi at quarterback, and the legendary Johnny Lattner, Heisman Trophy winner. And that book is, I think, out of print, but you can find copies of it on Amazon. And the second book is Undisputed, which is about the 1966 season. And that book may still be in print in some places, but also available on Amazon. And this book came out on August 1st. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, from the University of Notre Dame Press. And I hope it becomes a success because it deserves to be. And as I mentioned, I'm trying to raise some funds for the Medical Research Foundation.
That's a beautiful thing, that is for sure. Mark, I really do appreciate you taking out the time to join us. I can't wait to read the book. It's called Era, The Life and Legacy of a Notre Dame Legend. Perfect timing with college football right around the corner as well. Mark, I truly enjoyed our time. Thank you again for making time for us here today.
Well, let's have another conversation after you read the book. We might have some more things to talk about, but I'd welcome that.
Oh, I would absolutely love that. Yes, definitely. I would love to get you back on as well. So I look forward to another conversation, Mark. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. You're welcome. Bye now.
Excellent conversation with Mark Hubbard as we talk about his new book, Era, The Life and Legacy of a Notre Dame Legend. And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Great to be back with you to get things off and rolling. Tomorrow, Football Tuesday, we'll have a lot of NFL talk to get into. And it is officially the beginning of the fall sports season. We get golf tomorrow. We have more soccer as well. All that coming up on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. We will see you then. Be safe. I am out.